Hello, I'm author Carnigaldin. Welcome to the next instalment of Wolf of the Plains.
Eluk sat in a gear twice the size of any other in the camp, on a throne of wood and polished leather. Yesuge had disdained such symbols of power, but Eluk took comfort from being raised above his bondsmen. He listened to the crackle of torches and the far-off voices of the tribe. He was drunk again and sat in sullen silence. The wolves had ranged far to the south in the years since Yesuge's death, till they reached a land infested with flies and wet air. But even as he had turned the wolves back on their old paths, longing for the cool, dry winds of the northern hills, Eluk had wondered what had become of the family of Yesuge. He wished he had sent bondsmen back to make a cleaner end to it. With a nagging sense of unfinished work, he had sent Toloi, Basan, and Unigan on ahead of the wolves as they drifted slowly north. It should be a simple enough matter for his bondsmen to find the bones of Yesuge's children. They would not have lasted long. Yet still, it nagged at him. When the warning horn sounded, Eluk lurched to his feet, shaking his head to clear it as he strode out into the cold air. He could already feel the rush of blood and excitement he relished. He hoped for raiders, or Toloi's return with the children of the old Khan. One or the other would bring blood to his sword, and he never found sleep so sweet and dreamless as when he had killed a man. His horse was brought, and Eluk whooped into the cold wind as the riders formed around him in perfect formation. He never felt as alive as at that moment, when the enemy had to be faced. Nothing else mattered as long as the warriors rode and he led them. At full gallop, Eluk wished there could be an enemy host coming against them, a battle to test his courage and make him feel again the intoxication of walking close to death. Instead, he saw only two figures on the plain, riding ponies too heavily laden to be a threat. The disappointment was bitter, but he quelled it. The wolves would take whatever the two men owned, leaving them with their lives unless they chose to fight. With drunken care, Eluk dismounted to face the strangers. To his surprise, he saw that they were both armed. It was rare to see long blades in the hands of wanderers. The skill to fold and beat steel was highly sought after amongst the tribes, and a good sword was a valuable possession. Yet the pair did not look prosperous. As Eluk strode closer, he watched the men carefully. One was old enough to be father to the second, but he looked strong despite his grey hair, braided into a queue down his back. Eluk felt a prickling sense of danger and ignored the younger one, knowing by instinct to watch the elder for a first move. "My name is Arslan," the elder said clearly, "and this is my son, Jelme. We are pledged to the wolves." The man looked around at the faces of the bondsmen. "Where is the one called Yesuge? I have honored my vow. I have found you at last." Eluk glowered at the strangers as they sat in the warmth of his gear. Two bondsmen stood ready, and Eluk was armed. Despite that, he felt a constant tension. Perhaps it was the utter lack of fear in both men. Nor had Arslan shown awe at the great gear Eluk had had constructed. He had handed over his sword without a backward glance, and Eluk felt his own simmering anger increase. "Yesuge was killed by Tartars almost 5 years ago," Eluk said, when they had drunk their bowls of tea. "Who are you to come to us now?" "It would have been earlier if you had stayed in the north. My son and I have ridden more than 1,000 days to find you and honor the vow I made to your father." "He was not my father," Eluk snapped. "I was first among his bondsmen." He saw the men exchange glances. "It was no idle rumor, then, that you abandoned Yesuge's sons and wife on the plain?" Arslan asked softly. Eluk found himself becoming defensive under the man's quiet scrutiny. "I am Khan of the Wolves. I have ruled them for 4 years, and they are stronger than they have ever been. If you are pledged to the wolves, you are pledged to me." Once again, he saw Arslan and his son glance at each other, and Eluk grew angry. "Look at me when I'm talking to you," he ordered. Obediently, Arslan faced the man on the throne. "How did you come by your long blades?" Eluk asked. "It is my craft to make them, my lord," Arslan said softly. "I was once the armourer for the Naymans." "You were banished?" Eluk asked immediately. I left the Khan after he took my wife for his own, Arslan replied. Eluk started suddenly, remembering a story he had heard years before. I have heard of this, he began, straining his memory. You are the one who challenged the Khan of the Naymans. You are the Oathbreaker. Arslan sighed. It was a long time ago and I was younger. But yes, the Khan was a cruel man, and though he accepted my challenge, he returned first to his gear. We fought, and I killed him. But when I went to claim my wife, I found he had cut her throat. It is a tired story, and I have not thought of it for many years. Arslan's eyes were dark with grief, and Eluk did not believe him. If you are that same man, you are said to be very skilled with the blade. Is it true? Arslan shrugged. Stories always exaggerate. Perhaps I was once. My son is better than I am now, yet I have my bellows, and I can build a forge. I have my skills, and I can still make weapons of war. I met Yesuge when he was hunting with his hawk. He saw the value for his families, and offered to break tradition, to bring us back into a tribe. He paused for a moment, looking back over the years. I was alone, and despairing when he found me. He offered me sanctuary with the wolves, if I could bring my wife out with my son. He was a great man, I think. I am greater, Eluk replied, irritated. If you have the skills you claim, the wolves will still welcome you with honor. I pledged myself to Yesuge and his heirs, Arslan said. Eluk snorted. Am I not Khan here? The wolves are mine, and you have offered yourself to the wolves. I accept you both, and I will offer you a gear, sheep, salt, and safety. The silence stretched and became uncomfortable, until Eluk wanted to curse. Then Arslan nodded, bowing his head. You do us great honor, he replied. Eluk smiled. Then it's settled. In the musty darkness of a new gear, Jelme turned to his father, keeping his voice low. Are we staying then? His father shook his head. We are not. This man who calls himself Khan is just a yapping dog with blood on his hands. Yesuge was a man of honor. He came across me when I was picking wild onions with just a little knife. He could have stolen everything I had, yet he did not. He treated me with honor. He shared meat and salt with me. I liked him. This Eluk is weak, where Yesuge was strong. I will not have my beautiful swords in his hands. He will guard us, Jelme warned. Arslan chuckled. Let him. We will be gone from here by the end of summer. It was 4 days after the arrival of Arslan and his son that Toluene and Bazan returned to the gears of the wolves, dragging a battered figure behind them. Eluk rode out with the others and yelled hoarsely when he saw Temujin staring at him through swollen eyes. The journey had been hard on Temujin, but he stood as straight as he could. Am I granted guest rights, then? Eluk backhanded a blow across his face that tumbled him to the ground. Welcome home, Temujin. I have waited a long time to see you with your belly on the ground. He raised his leg and pressed Temujin face down into the dust, and there was a light in his eye that made the other warriors silent. It was Basan who broke the silence. My lord, Unigan is dead. The others escaped. Eluk seemed to drag himself back from far away, releasing the silent figure under his boot. They all survived, he said, surprised. Basan shook his head. Bector is dead. The others still live. We burned their camp. You have done well, Eluk said, addressing Toluene and seeing how he swelled his chest with pride. You may have the pick of my own horses and a dozen skins of Arag. Toluene bowed low. You honor me, my lord, he said, stealing a sideways look at Temujin. I would enjoy seeing him humbled. You shall, Toluene. The spirits need blood to feed their hunger. Temujin struggled to his knees and spat on the ground. I have known sheep shit with more honor than you, he told Eluk slowly. He tried not to wince as one of the bondsmen used the hilt of his sword to batter him unconscious. Temujin woke again with warm water spattering his face. He gasped and struggled to his feet, crying out in pain as he found one of his fingers had been broken and his right eye was too clotted with blood to open. Above his head, he could see bars blocking the starlight, and he shivered. He was in a frozen hole, the wooden lattice too far above for him to jump. He pressed his good hand to the walls and found the earth was slick with wetness. His feet were submerged in water, and above him he heard low chuckles. To his horror, a soft grunt was followed by another rain of stinking liquid. The bondsmen were urinating into the hole and laughing as they did so. The men grunted as they lifted a heavy stone onto the crisscross of branches. When they had gone, Temujin crouched against the frozen, muddy walls, unable to do more than drift in and out of sleep. Before dawn, a dark figure leant over the lattice. Temujin winced in anticipation of another emptying bladder, but instead the figure spoke.
"Who are you?" came a low voice.
Temujin felt his pride rekindle. "I am the eldest surviving son of Yesuge, who was Khan to the wolves." He stared up defiantly. "I am the land, and the bones of the hills," he said fiercely. "I am the winter. When I am dead, I will come for you all in the coldest nights." The shadow murmured a few words and then vanished, letting the light of the stars shine down into the pit. Temujin hugged his knees and waited for the dawn.
"Who are you to tell me not to despair?" he murmured.
Temujin watched the sun pass overhead, its fire damped by heavy cloud. The thin warmth was welcome each morning after the frozen night. When he drifted back to consciousness, his first act was to pull his feet free of the slurry of ice and mud, then stamp and pump his limbs until his blood began moving again. He had used one corner of the pit for his waists, but it was still practically underfoot. By the third day, the air was thick and nauseating and full of flies. They had thrown bread and mutton down to him, laughing at his attempts to catch the pouches before they fell into the slop. His stomach had squeezed painfully the first time he had eaten one from the ground. But it was that or starve, and he forced it down. He did not understand why Eluk had left him in the pit rather than give him a quick death. When the rock was removed and the lattice thrown aside, it was almost with a sense of relief that he realized death was coming at last. He raised his arms and allowed himself to be dragged out. Temujin fell to his knees as they let go. He could see more than 100 faces around him, and as his eyes cleared, he began to recognize people he had once known. Some of them jeered, and the smallest children threw stones at him. Others looked troubled, the strain forcing them into the cold face. He prepared himself for death, vowing to give up his spirit with dignity intact. His father and his blood demanded it. Eluk sat in his great chair, brought into the sun for the occasion.
"I would have brought him here in honor,"
Eluk bellowed to the crowd,
"but I found him living like an animal, without the graces of men. Yet even a rat can bite. And when he killed my bondsman, I had this tribeless wanderer dragged back for justice. Shall we give it to him? Shall we show him the wolves have not grown soft?"
Temujin watched as Eluk's bondsmen cheered mindlessly. But many more stood in silence and watched the dirty young man who stared back with his yellow eyes. Slowly, Temujin rose to his feet. He stank, and he was covered in fly bites and sores, but he stood, unbending, and waited for the blade. Eluk drew his sword.
"The spirits have abandoned his family, my wolves. Look at his state now and believe it. Where is the luck of Yesuge?"
It was a mistake to mention the old Khan's name. Many heads bowed automatically, and Eluk flushed in anger. It was suddenly not enough to take Temujin's head.
"Time to a pony," he said. "Drag him bloody. I will kill him tomorrow."
Toloi backed up a brown gelding and tied a long rope to the saddle. The crowd parted excitedly, craning to see this strange sport. As his wrists were fastened to the rope, Temujin turned his pale gaze on Eluk and spat on the ground. Eluk grinned hugely. Toloi turned in the saddle, his expression a mixture of smugness and malice.
"How fast can you run?"
he said. Let's find out, Temujin said, licking cracked lips. When Tolui finally returned, Temujin was a dead weight on the rope. It was difficult to see a patch of skin that was not scraped raw and bloody. His clothes had been reduced to dusty rags. As Tolui cut the rope, Temujin did not feel it. His hands were almost black, and his mouth hung open, red spittle drooling. Basan stood at the door of his family gear, his face pale and strained. Temujin sat in the icy filth, barely conscious of his surroundings. He ached in every bone, and his face was so fat with bruising he could only see through a slit around one eye. He had never felt so battered in his life, and it was all he could do not to weep. He kept his silence, finding a strength of will he had not known he possessed until that moment. It was made hard in a furnace of hatred. Something grated above his head, and he looked blearily upwards. To his dull astonishment, he saw that the lattice had vanished, and the stars shone down without restriction. Something came slithering down the wall, and Temujin felt the rough fibres of a braided rope. Above him, he saw a shadow block the stars. "Tie yourself on," came the voice from the night before. With clumsy fingers, Temujin tied the rope round his waist. As the rope bit into his back, Temujin's legs scrabbled uselessly at the earth walls. He found he could dig his hands in as he climbed, though the effort was like setting his skin on fire. Still, he made no sound until at last he lay on the frozen ground in a silent encampment. "Get away as far as you can," his rescuer said. "If you survive, I will come to you." In the starlight, Temujin could see he was grey-haired with powerful shoulders, but he did not know the man.
"Who are you to save me?"
he whispered.
"I was pledged to your father, Yesuge," Arslan replied. "Now go, and I will follow in the confusion of the search."
Temujin hesitated. Could Iluk have staged it all to find the location of his brothers? He could not risk it.
"When you leave," Temujin said, "ride 5 days north, sunset to sunset. Find a high hill to watch for me. I will come if I can. You have my thanks forever, nameless one."
Arslan smiled. He had not intended to give his name in case the young warrior was captured and forced to reveal it. Under Temujin's gaze, he made a decision.
"My name is Arslan. I travel with my son Jelme. If you live, we will meet again."
Arslan replaced the lattice and stone, then moved away like a cat in the frozen starlight. Temujin could do no more than shuffle as he took a different direction, concentrating on going as far as he could before the hunt began. By dawn, Temujin was doubled over with pain and weakness, limping and sobbing with every step. He collapsed at last on the muddy bank of a stream, lying panting there with his head turned to the pale sky that heralded sunrise. He watched the first gold spark touch the dark horizon and heard dogs baying. He heaved himself along the bank, hidden by the grasses on the edge, as he moved in spasms, flopping and weak. The howling dogs were closer, and his heart beat in terrified panic. With a groan of the icy sting, he pulled himself into the water, heading out to the deepest point and a thick bed of reeds. The part of him that could still think forced him to ignore the first patch. If they saw where he had been lying, they would search all around it. The river numbed the worst of his pain, and he used the current to push himself downstream on his hands and knees, scrabbling in the soft mud. They would see the cloud he had disturbed. It was surely hopeless. But he did not stop, searching for deeper water. The river wound around a corner under overhanging trees. On the other side, a bank of blue ice had survived from winter in constant shadow. The rushing water had eaten a shelf beneath it, and he made for it without hesitation, forcing his way in under the ridge of ice and kneeling in the mud with just his eyes and nose above the surface. He heard the excited yelping of dogs nearby, but his thoughts moved too slowly to feel fear. Was that a shout? Perhaps they had found the trail he had made across the clay. He did not care. The cold had reached inside him and clutched his heart, slowing it with a terrible force. It was growing weaker with every passing moment. The yelping of the dogs grew quieter, though he remained where he was. In the end, it was not a conscious decision that made him move. more the impulse of flesh that did not want to die. Slowly, he pushed himself out into the deeper water, with limbs so heavy he could barely move them. He pushed himself to the far bank and lay on the dark clay again, beneath the overhanging grass.